Mr. Anderson, your case has just been called.
Good morning, Justices. May I please reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal?
Yes.
Good morning, Chief Justice Lemons, Justices of the Supreme Court of Virginia. My name is Joan Burrows, and I am here this morning representing Kamisha Hodge, the appellant in this matter. Justices, this is a very simple case. The Commonwealth, at trial, was required to prove that Mr. Allen was a law enforcement officer. They failed to meet that burden, and therefore they failed to prove their case against Ms. Hodge. Virginia Code 18.2-460A criminalizes obstructing a police officer who is conducting an investigation. The order making Mr. Allen, a special conservator of the peace, laid out a very specific rubric outlining what made him a special conservator of the peace and when he was entitled to exercise those privileges. That rubric said that he is only a special conservator of the peace when he carries with him a badge or identification card showing his office. The Commonwealth presented no evidence to that fact. The first time this identification card or badge is brought up is at page 78 of the Joint Appendix during the defense counsel's renewed motion to strike. Since there is no evidence from the Commonwealth about whether he met the requirements laid out in the order making him a special conservator of the peace, there could be no evidence that he was in fact a police officer, and therefore there was not sufficient evidence to prove that Ms. Hodge obstructed justice. It is just that simple. Justices, I believe that there has been some confusion both at the Court of Appeals and with the Commonwealth about what it is that I am arguing, so I'd like to take a few moments to tell you what I am not arguing today. First and foremost, I am not arguing anything that has not been brought up to the Court of Appeals prior to this, nor am I bringing up anything that was not argued to the trial court. Supreme Court Rule 517 clearly states that only assignments of error relating to the assignments of error presented in and actions taken by the Court of Appeals may be included in a petition to this court. As I argued in my reply brief to the Commonwealth's appellee's brief, first and foremost, this is a petition stage rule. It was not brought up at the petition stage, therefore I would argue that the Commonwealth has waived this argument. However, this exact argument was the argument both in substance and almost in structure that I brought to the Court of Appeals. We brought it here to the Supreme Court because obviously they did not rule in a favor that we thought was appropriate, therefore we brought this to this honorable court and are asking this court to rule favorably. The action that we are assigning error to from the Court of Appeals is their ruling. We believe that it was based on a misconstruction of our argument, and therefore we would ask this court to hear our argument, to understand our argument, and to rule favorably. Second, Your Honors, we're not arguing that the Commonwealth failed to prove that Mr. Allen was engaged in the lawful execution of his duties. I agree with both the Court of Appeals and the Commonwealth. That section of the law is not applicable to the first part under which she is charged. And third, we are not arguing that we should be able to raise a just cause defense. I understand and agree with the Court of Appeals and with the Commonwealth. We are procedurally barred from raising that defense. However, that defense is not necessary because we are not arguing that Ms. Hodge had a right to obstruct justice. We are arguing that the Commonwealth failed to prove that Mr. Allen was a police officer. It is a very straightforward statute. The order making Mr. Allen a police special conservator of the peace is very straightforward, and I think, therefore, it requires a very straightforward ruling from this court. Justices, the applicable standard of review in this case, as with all sufficiency arguments, is a very high one. I understand and appreciate that we cannot be in the business of second-guessing trial courts. However, when a case such as this one, where the ruling is based on facts, not in evidence, as it was here, that ruling must be overturned. Again, there was no mention of whether he had his badge identification card with him until the renewed motion to strike. The Commonwealth presented no evidence about this, and therefore there could be no evidence that supported and showed that he was a police officer as contemplated under 18.2-460A. And so I realize this is a very high bar. I believe that we have met that bar, and therefore I ask this court to reverse the trial court's decision and to enter judgment in favor of Ms. Hodge. If the court has any questions, I'm happy to answer them. Otherwise, I would yield the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
You have 10 minutes and 31 seconds.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor. Please, the court, Robert Anderson for the Commonwealth. I don't think this case is quite as simple as counsel indicates, with one limited exception, that if the court agrees with my argument on that, that's by necessity the end of the case. Just before I get into why I think that is, just point out a couple of things. Courts sometimes talk about issues being joined. The problem here, I think in any meaningful way, that's not happened. The Court of Appeals had some very specific rulings in turning down this appeal, such as it distinguished between subsection A and the other subsections in the statute B and C because they qualified the performance of duties with lawful. Subsection A does not have that qualification. So the Court of Appeals concluded that the mere fact that you were not in the lawful discharge of your duties didn't necessarily mean the person was entitled to relief, but it was pertinent to the just cause provision in subsection A. And because if the person was not lawfully in the discharge of their duties, that could bear upon whether there was just cause. Court of Appeals held that just cause was like any other affirmative defense, and the defense has to put on some kind of evidence in order to trigger the Commonwealth's general obligation to prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. Here, there was no evidence. It never came up until the renewed motion to strike, which counsel basically indicated today. So, therefore, just cause necessarily was not shown. Now, I've argued that the defendant's brief has defaulted by not challenging them, even if you don't regard it as a quote-unquote default. At the very least, I think it greatly and needlessly complicates this court's efforts in deciding this appeal when the Court of Appeals has three or four related specific rulings and reasoning, and none of them are mentioned directly, and there's only the most oblique, to be charitable, oblique challenge to any of them. So I don't think the issue has been joined. But beyond that, let me go to why I don't think this case is quite as simple as counsel says. Under the terms of the statute, you have to show that the person without just cause, which we agree is not an issue now, the just cause angle, knowingly obstructs an officer in the performance of his duties. So we don't have any issue here about just cause. We don't have any issue about knowing obstruction. We could hardly have an issue about just cause because the defendant denied that she'd even flushed the marijuana down the toilet, which was the basis for the obstruction of justice charge. Instead, we're concerned only with the language in there, law enforcement officer, and the performance of his duties. And counsel's arguments, or the defense's arguments, because counsel wasn't in trial, the defense's arguments on those two phrases have charitably been all over the lot, both at trial and on appeal. If you go to page 7 of the defendant's opening brief, that following paragraph, the per curiam order by the Court of Appeals denying Hodges' appeal placed undue emphasis on whether Allen was lawfully engaged in the performance of his duty, skipping over Hodges' primary contention that he, in fact, was not an officer. So by their own precepts, those two things raise discrete matters. And if you look at pages 6 through 9 of the opening brief and 3 and 4 of the reply brief, again, the argument is, well, if the challenge had been to the performance of duties, Court of Appeals would be right, but we're talking about whether there was a status here of an officer. A couple of things. First, I think counsel said today, talking about the order, which is the origin or the starting point in all of this, counsel said that under the order, an officer is a person's a special conservator of the peace if carrying a badge or ID card. Again, remembering that he's distinguished between those two things, I think that is incorrect by the express terms of the order. If you look at page 95, and again, unfortunately, this order is out of order sequentially, but if you look at page 95, it said it is ordered that the powers of the special conservator of the peace appointed in shall be exercised only when you have the proper ID. In other words, it's not saying you're no longer a special conservator of the peace. You're saying you can't exercise the duties. Again, by their own description, those are two separate matters. Then, if you go to page 53 of the initial motion to dismiss, it pretty plainly confirms the defense's own view that the only issue here was whether or not the performance of duties aspect was satisfied, because there was some issue about the circumstances under which this officer was at this particular apartment complex doing, as he said, routine foot patrol. And the motion to strike said, page 53, I think the Commonwealth has established that Mr. Allen has been given law enforcement powers, which to me means he qualifies as that kind of officer, but the Commonwealth has not established that he was in the performance of his duties. And then they go on to say there's no evidence that his employer was contracted to be there, whether he's been contractually hired to do that. Again, talking about performance of the duties.
Hey, counsel. I feel like I'm watching a tug of war here. Opposing counsel says, it's really pretty simple. You haven't said it's really complex, but your argument's making it complex. I'm a simple sort of a person. And I'm just wondering, and I think our court has to decide, is this part of the Commonwealth's proof to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, or is it something that the defense raises in terms of who brings it before the court in order to prevail?
We're talking.
Hold on, I haven't asked a question yet. Trying to figure that out, I thought there might be some other provisions of the code that would shed light on it. And there is a provision that neither side has cited to this date, 19.2-74, which says conservators of the peace appointed under Chapter 2, 19.2-12, et sec., may issue summonses pursuant to this section if such officers are in uniform or displaying a badge of office. So there's at least two places where the General Assembly seems to believe that displaying or carrying the badge of office or being in uniform, in other words, being able to specifically show I am law enforcement, is important. Now, number one, how would you view that section in light of 18.2460? And whose burden is it and why under the statute?
First of all, I haven't seen the statute. It was never brought to the attention of the court, the lower court, this court.
Well, it's been brought to the attention of this court now, so
that's
I'm
correct.
Happy. It seems pretty simple. I'm happy to read it again if you'd like.
If you could.
Yes. Conservators of the peace appointed under Chapter 2, Sections 19.2-12, et sec., may issue summonses pursuant to this section if such officers are in uniform or displaying a badge of office. It's not the section that we're here
right
parsing, but it does seem to shed light on the General Assembly's intent if we believe there's any ambiguity about that intent.
Well, I'd say several things. One, the defendant certainly was in a position to make such an argument in the lower court. So, and I do think that's important. I mean, the lower court would potentially be reversed on the basis of something that was never brought to its attention, even though it was plainly available. That's the first thing.
I'd really like for you to deal with the statute itself.
Okay, well, let's assume that for the moment that means, and I'm sort of talking in the blind here, let's assume for the moment that in fact shows that the Commonwealth had as an element of proof that you have to show the person had a badge or an ID card at the time he exercised his authorities, which is my ultimate defense in the latter part of my brief. I think if that was the Commonwealth's requirement, whether it be under the statute that has been exclusively at issue up to now. Either way, I think the Commonwealth prevails. We have here a case where...
If it was the Commonwealth's burden to show, to prove, to produce evidence that he was carrying a badge or displaying a badge, then you prevail?
Yes, because I think the evidence viewed in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth on appeal, which is axiomatic, shows at the very least that there was circumstantial evidence to lead to that conclusion, and I think the circuit court made a finding of fact.
What is that evidence?
We have here, let me get to it, I'll just sort of rattle them off. First of all, we have the officer saying that he was there on routine foot patrol as pursuant to his employment by this security company. The security company, it was proven, had been contractual.
Can one be on routine foot patrol pursuant to their employment with the company and not have a badge?
This is the first of about 8 or 9 facts that I would want to go through.
That's foot patrol and employment.
That's the starting point.
Okay.
He's on routine foot patrol pursuant to his company's contractual obligation to monitor what's going on at this apartment complex and, if necessary, to exercise police powers. That's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is that when he goes up to this defendant's apartment complex, he identifies himself as police. Even in her own testimony, the defendant said when he came there, said that he was Richmond police. And by the way, there was some suggestion that whether you say Richmond police or police somehow matters. I think it plainly doesn't, because in this case, he was appointed to act in Richmond, and this occurred in Richmond. So whether he said the word Richmond or not hardly mattered. She said she was happy and welcoming to see them. My brief may say it a little bit better. Again, just before I move on, again, he said that when he was doing the routine foot patrol, that was in the discharge of his duties as a private officer. Okay. And then he says, I'm an officer. He said he was a Richmond police officer. She seemed happy to see him. Then she testifies that when she spoke with Allen, that he, quote, had one other police officer, well, security officer with him, and another standing at the bottom of the stairwell, did not in any way differentiate between these various people he saw. She also said that when this man in her apartment ran away, two quote-unquote security guards and Allen ran after him. Then a few minutes later, she said Allen, the officer who we're concerned with, was reading out of a book with a guy he had custody. They just wrote him a summons. When he told her, when he asked what she'd done about the marijuana and whether she flushed it down, and she falsely said she had, and he said he was going to charge her with obstruction of justice for doing that. Now, I think at the very least, that's circumstantial evidence that this person had all the indicia of a police officer. In other words, if he, just to give an obvious example, if he showed up wearing a t-shirt and shorts and everything else in this case was identical, I doubt very seriously if the defendant would be referring to him in that manner. I doubt if he'd be referring to himself in that manner. The
counsel,
circuit court...
Counsel, I've reviewed the record. There is no evidence whatsoever about what he was wearing.
The point is there's circumstantial evidence of... There's every indication she viewed him as a legitimate officer. The trier of fact could find from
because
that...
Because he said he was.
Well... That's not
and
the
because
most,
of and because of context.
That's not the most favorable view of this evidence of the Commonwealth. I'm about to run out of time, but if
well, let me wrap it up. If I am looking for all of the circumstantial evidence that indicates that he was carrying a badge, you have given it to me. That's it.
Well,
so everything that gets put in the blender, and when I press the button, it's going to come out saying he was carrying the badge. Is that
no? First of all, it's conceivable if you look at my brief, I may have forgotten one or two additional things. But beyond that, the final renewed motion strike, which is the first time this ever came up, that's one problem.
I'm not talking. My question's been answered.
Yeah, but I'm really enjoying this.
Okay.
If you had more, that'd be fun.
But in any event, no. What I was going to say is,
I think Justice Mims has indicated that he's through with this questioning, and your time has expired. Rebuttal.
Thank you.
I'd like to start where Justice Mims, I believe, left off. Justice, you asked about whose burden it was to prove this element. I think it's very simple. The Commonwealth, whenever they bring a case against a citizen of the Commonwealth of Virginia, are required to prove every element of their case. In obstruction of justice, there are two elements. There needs to be a police officer and there needs to be an obstruction. Therefore, they're required to prove that Mr. Allen was, in fact, a police officer. The order shows us a very simple way to prove whether or not he was a police officer, and that's whether or not he had his ID card and his badge with him. As you pointed out, Justice Mims, there is nothing in the evidence that indicates that he didn't, in fact, show up in a T-shirt and shorts. We don't know what he was wearing. We don't know if he had his ID card. We don't know if he had his badge. Therefore, this evidence leaves the Commonwealth without proof that he was, in fact, a police officer, and therefore leaves them without proof that there was obstruction of justice in this case.
Counsel, let me ask you. You keep saying that he was a police officer or a conservator of the police. There was a lot of discussion in the trial court about the admission of the order which, in fact, appointed him a special commissioner. And the trial court said that order says that you are a conservator of the police. And that was what your objections were at trial until after trial. Then you said, well, he couldn't act as one. It's not that he wasn't one. It's that he couldn't act as one. That's what it seems to me your argument is here, because he didn't have an ID card or a badge.
I think the distinction that I would like to draw and that I hope I draw in my brief is that we're not arguing that he was or wasn't a special conservator of the peace. What we're arguing is that there is no evidence whatsoever that he met the requirements to be the conservator of the peace on the night that he interacted with Ms. Hodge. The order specifically lays out that he cannot be a special conservator of the peace unless he has that badge or ID card with him. There is nothing in the record, in the Commonwealth's evidence or in the defense evidence, that he had those items with him.
Pardon me, but the order says that he cannot act as, he can't do certain things without carrying the badge or the ID card. But the order clearly appoints him as a conservator of the peace.
Correct, but I think okay. I think the order is very specific about when he can and cannot exercise those powers. And I think
well, that was the point I was trying to make. Thank you.
Sorry. So I think under 18.2-460, in order for him to be acting as a police officer, the order shows that he has to have his badge identification card, and there's just no evidence with regard to that. I think he certainly was a conservator of the peace. However, it was on the Commonwealth to prove that he had those items with him and therefore was acting within his powers as a special conservator of the peace on the night in question with Ms. Hodge. And justices, I think this is a safety issue. I think the reason that we have this requirement that they have their badge or ID card is because they're not Richmond City Police. These are private police officers, private security officers that are patrolling places where people live. This woman lives with her children, potentially with other family members, and this person is coming up to her door. So I think it's completely reasonable that he be required to bring these things with him to show her that he is, in fact, acting with his proper authority. I think the Commonwealth was required to prove that, and they simply did not prove it. I think the Attorney General, or Mr. Anderson, also recited to several elements that he thought were proof that circumstantial evidence of Mr. Allen's status as a special conservator of the peace. He spent a lot of time talking about my client thinking that he was a police officer. I would put to the court her subjective opinions about what he was or was not is not relevant. It's certainly not relevant in things like assault and battery on a law enforcement officer, and it's certainly not relevant here. I think whether she thought he was a police officer or not is simply something that does not need to be brought up or considered here. In closing, Your Honors, I realize Mr. Anderson would disagree with this, but I think, again, this is a very straightforward case. The Commonwealth had an order that they could follow to show that he was, in fact, a special conservative of the police and, therefore, a police officer under the statute. There's no evidence that shows that he was, in fact, carrying those items. Therefore, the evidence was insufficient to find Ms. Hodge guilty of obstruction of justice. Now, I'd ask the court to rule accordingly.
Counsel, may I ask you one more question? The Court of Appeals opinion said that the statute under which your client was convicted did not require that the police, that the Commonwealth had to prove the lawful performance of his duties. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that.
And your answer to that is it does require to prove that he was doing the lawful performance of duties, not merely that he was a conservative of the peace. Is that your answer?
No, I don't believe that would be my answer. My answer would be the law requires that he be shown that on that night in question that he was, in fact, a special conservator of the peace. The order indicates that he's a special conservator of the peace and exercises those powers when he has his badge or identification card with him. They didn't prove that, so I would argue that the evidence is insufficient.
So you...
I'm sorry.
Okay.
What is your argument that he was not a law enforcement officer?
Oh, hold on just a moment. Clerk, restart that clock. Go ahead.
No, my argument is that the Commonwealth's evidence was insufficient to prove that he was a law enforcement officer that night. He very well may have been. They didn't prove it.
Not that he was in the lawful performance of his duties. They
Correct.
Didn't prove that he was a law enforcement officer.
Correct. And if I've answered the panel's questions...
All right, thank you very much. Call the next case.